Hello, this is Utah Phillips, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Say, mate, have you sighted a schooner way out on the Santa Fe Trail? She'll get there by Monday or sooner with a water keg tied on the tail. There was Mammy and Pa on the mule seat, and somewhere along by the way, a little tow-headed gal on a pinto, just dangling for old Santa Fe. I seed her ride down the arroyo out onto the Arkansas sand, with a smile like an acre of sunflowers and a little brown quirt in her hand. She mounted her pony so airy and rode like she carried the mail, and her eyes nigh set fire to the prairie, way out on the Santa Fe Trail. Well, here we are again. This is Utah Phillips in the little studio here with Steve Baker at KVMR, Nevada City, California, our local community radio station, the last of the really steam-powered community radio stations. When we're in Nevada City, our hometown up here in the foothills of the Sierra. It's a little old gold mining town, interesting people. And yesterday I saw our mayor walk into the last of the working furriers around town, a fellow making horseshoes. And I saw the mayor walk over. The fellow had just pulled a horseshoe out of the fire and was laying it over onto the boards to cool. Saw the mayor pick the horseshoe up, dropped it right away. Blacksmith said, burnt yourself, didn't you? Mayor said, nah, just don't take me very long to look at a horseshoe. That poem that I started it out with was James Grafton Rogers. I believe he was from Colorado Springs. It was around the turn of the century that he was a lawyer. He made up songs upstairs, well, poems, and then his office was over the postmaster, and so he'd pass them downstairs, and the fellow in the post office would make up tunes for him. I'm going to do a program of things by and about cowboys. There's not a lot of love lost between me and that image, you know. The cowboys made it early into the movies. They made it early into vaudeville and all of that. Even though their population was minuscule compared to that of the hard rock miners, of the immigrant loggers of the Northwest, of people working on the railroad or following the wheat harvest, those great vast populations never made it into the movies or into much of the literature. And that's because when you start dealing with those other trades, you run smack into the labor movement. You run smack into the Centralia Massacre, the Everett Massacre, and all of those things. The cowboy presented an image to the American public, a strong male image who will act alone and will act violently if provoked. And that's the way they wanted us to behave and be treated as individuals and to avoid the labor movement entirely. And that's my thesis, folks. You know, that's how I feel about it. But I realize my problem is with image. It's not with the actuality, because I've known many real hard-working and really impoverished cowboys in my life over in Utah. So I guess part of this program is going to be a way for me to confront and help overcome my prejudices. I come from a state with vast, vast territory, the state of Utah, vast ranges. When I left Utah in 1969 to take up my trade and was back in Saratoga Springs, New York, I found that I missed that. So the first song I made up when I left home was this one here, The Tellin' Takes Me Home.
Let me sing to you all the old songs I know of wild, windy places locked in timeless snow and white crimson deserts where the muddy rivers flow. It's sad, but the telling takes me home. Come along with me to some places that I've been, where people all look back and still remember when and the quicksilver legends like sunlight turn and blend. It's sad, but the telling takes me home. We'll walk along some wagon roads or down the iron rail, past lines of rusty Cadillacs that mark the Boomtown Trail, where dreamers never win and doers never fail. It's sad, but the telling takes me home. I could tell you all some lies that were just made up for fun, where the loudest, meanest bragging could beat the fastest gun. And I'll show you nameless graves that tell the way the West was won. It's sad, but the telling takes me home. I'll sing of my amigos who come from down below, and whisper in their loving tongue the songs of Mexico. They worked their stolen Eden, lost so long ago. It's sad, but the telling takes me home. I'll sing about an emptiness the East has never known, where coyotes don't pay taxes and a man can be alone, and yet have to walk forever just to find a telephone. It's sad, but the telling takes me home. Let me sing to you all the old songs I know, of wild, windy places locked in timeless snow, and white crimson deserts where the muddy rivers flow. It's sad, but the telling takes me home.
Yes, it does take me home. I started out with James Grafton Rogers. Let's pursue that. A song I learned off of a woman named Peg who deals horses up there in above Denver in Colorado. Son Tom Hayden runs a two-man sawmill up there. She knew James Grafton Rogers and taught me this song that he had penned many, many years ago called Old Dolores. Now, we're not talking about Dolores, Colorado. We're talking about the old ghost town of Dolores, New Mexico, a mining town in its day and a cattle town. All you'd find there now is the fire-blackened ruins of the old church and some of the hearthstones. I visited Old Dolores. It's a state park now. I was sent over there by Gail I. Gardner, whom I've referred to in previous shows, wrote Tying Knots in the Devil's Tail, to track down a song warehouse by the name of Samuel P. Scoggins. Sam Scoggins' self-appointed task was to haul brushwood down for the campfires there in the state park at Old Dolores, and the RVs were all circled around there. He used a mule to do that, a Rocky Mountain Canary, a long-eared mule, but the trail led down under the Angelus Arch, the small arch where the bell used to hang. And as the mule would go through the arch, its ears would scrape the underside of the arch, and the mule would get spooked and stopped. Now, it's real hard to get a stopped mule started. You can build a fire under it. You can lift its tail and squirt kerosene up there, but it might kick your brains out. By the time I showed up, Samuel P. Scoggins was up on a stool under that arch with a mallet hammer and a coal chisel, trying to cut two grooves in the arch so that the mule's ears would slide through and he wouldn't spend half the day trying to get him to move. I stood and watched him. I understood what he was doing, and I said, "Excuse me, Mr. Scoggins, but it appears to me that that arch has been here a long time and it's going to take you a deal of trouble to cut those grooves, but it appears that's just loose sandy soil down under the arch. Why don't you just get a shovel and dig it out?" Well, he looked down and said, "Why, a damn fool, mule's ears are too long, not its legs." Well, let's listen to James Grafton Rogers' Old Dolores.
In the country down below, where the little pinions grow, it's nearly always half a day to water. There stood a little town where the creek come tumbling down from the mesa where she surely hadn't oughter. The streets were bright with candlelight, and the whole town joined the chorus, and every man in sight let his cattle drift at night, just a mosey to the town of old Dolores. Well, things would kind of spin till the sun come up again, like the back of some old yellow prairie wagon, and show you dim and red, maybe half a hundred head of our saddle ponies standing reins a-dragging. The red mud walls, the waterfalls, the whole wide world before us. Now the dobe walls are gone, but goats bell in the dawn ain't a-jingling in the streets of old Dolores. Well, the dance hall girls would fool in the plaza in the cool. It's there he used to meet her by a willer. But I guess that any girl gives a fella's heart a whirl when the same's been using saddles for a pillar. The wide-eyed stars, the long cigars, the drinks that Joe poured for us. If there's any little well down within the gates of hell, I know the boys have called it old Dolores.
Isn't that a good piece of poetry? Well, Colonel Charlie Goodnight and Oliver Loving were pioneers of the Old Southwest, founders of the great Goodnight Loving Trail, folk heroes, both of them. The Goodnight Loving Trail ran from El Paso, Texas, up to Denver with a spur into Montana. In years past, I have traveled the country and told tales about them, told tales about the egg-setting horse and the great turtle drive of 86. And if you missed that one, well, it was a rare beauty. Here's a tale from kind of about their middle years. They recorded in Taos, New Mexico in those days. Now, Colonel Goodnight, and I do mean Colonel Goodnight, you know, is a man of vast and consummate dignity, built a beautiful house in town. But his wrangler, who handled the remuda, the horses that traveled with any herd, Oliver Loving, built his little cabin on the outside of town so he could corral the horses, built himself a brand new outhouse, a little one-hole affair, put a hickory seat on it, and then he put two coats of spar varnish on it so that it would last a long time. And then, not anticipating visitors, he rode off into town to visit with his friends. Well, Colonel Goodnight loped up, and as they say, Colonel Goodnight was a man of vast and consummate dignity. I mean, he was silvered of mane and eagle of eye and hawk of beak and lantern of jaw, firm of grip, swivel of hip, lean of shank, fleet of foot, the whole nine yards. I mean, he was a picture of the Old West. He cast about for Oliver Loving, couldn't find him, spied the new outhouse, decided to run some field trials on it. He always admired the quality of the literature in Oliver Loving's outhouses. He used to say, read it and wipe. While he was sitting there, Oliver Loving had neglected to put a wet paint sign on the door. Colonel Goodnight was there for the better part of 4 hours, lodged fast. He couldn't get up. And finally, Oliver Loving came back and said, and heard that he was bellowing, madder than a boiled owl down there in the outhouse. And Oliver Loving went down there and said, oh, don't worry about it, Charlie. He could call him Charlie, and he hot-footed up the cabin, got some cold chisels, screwdrivers, paint spatulas. He got a crowbar and a sledgehammer in case the exigency got dire. Went back down there, started poking and prodding around Colonel Goodnight, him bellowing all the while. Couldn't budge him. Decided to seek some professional advice. Well, with the sledgehammer, he bashed off the front of the outhouse, and then with the crowbar, he levered the seat up with Colonel Goodnight poked through it, got the whole affair over one shoulder like a big L, toted it over to where the colonel's horse was reined up, threw the whole affair up on top of the horse with Colonel Goodnight pointed skyward, and then led the whole affair down through town, greeting his friends along the way. Hi, Jake. Hi, Al. Up to the doctor's office. Well, the doc came out, walked around the horse two or three times. Oliver said, well, Doc, you ever see anything like that? Doc said, well, yes, I have, but not with a frame around it. Well, let's listen to a rare old piece recorded in the 1920s by Haywire Mac McClintock. He used to be an organizer for the Industrial Workers of the World, had a minor career as a cowboy singer. This is a sentimental song with an odd twist. It's called The Trusty Lariat.
Through the high Sierra Mountains came an SP passenger train. The hobos tried to ride her, but found was all in vain. The fireman was a cowboy, but do not think that's strange. He could make more money a shoveling coal than riding on the range. So though he was a cowboy, and though he had to sweat, he still remained a Western guy and kept his lariat. The train was way behind time when suddenly ahead a little child strolled on the track and filled them all with dread. My gosh, the hoghead shouted as he slammed on all the brakes. I'll never stop this SP train, she ain't got what it takes. Up sprang the cowboy fireman, and a gallant lad was he. Now I will save that baby if I wreck the whole SP. He climbed up on the boiler as the train sped on its course and swung his trusty lariat as though he rode a horse. He dropped his loop around a pole that stood beside the track and tied the other end of it around the big smokestack. He jerked the train right off the rails and caused an awful wreck, and our hero lay there in the ditch with the engine on his neck. Oh, we will all remember that 45th of May, for there were many gallant hearts all filled with fear that day. They buried that poor fireman where the prairie wind blows wild. He killed 200 passengers, but thank God he saved a child.
Haywire Mac McClintock. Isn't that a peach? Isn't that a peach? Well, now, Big Bill Haywood. Big Bill Haywood, the founder of the Industrial Workers of the World. In 1890, as a young fellow, Haywood signed on with the Hoppin Ranch in Humboldt County, Nevada. He rode there 2 years. He had enough of long hours, low pay, being away from home, and so he quit. Years passed. He was involved in with the Western Federation of Miners, with the Colorado Industrial Wars, became a great organizer, was one of the founders of the Industrial Workers of the World at the Chicago Convention in 1905. When the Wobblies were founded, Haywood turned back to the cowboys because he knew what that life was like. So late in 1905, he founded the Bronco Busters and Range Riders Union of the Industrial Workers of the World. The first speech he delivered in their behalf was at an enormous gathering of about 500 rodeo cowboys in Denver. It was the stock owners and the ranchers that put on this big feed for him in the ballroom of the Adams Hotel. So Haywood went there, and there were these cowboys eating all this gorgeous food that the ranchers had put out, and the champagne flowed like champagne. And he stood up and made this class-conscious speech about organizing, and they picked him up and threw him out. And that was that for the Bronco Busters and Range Riders Union, the Industrial Workers of the World. Nonetheless, there is a Union Cowboy song, and we're going to hear it now, sung by Bob Bosson from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Now, boys, when I first drove for J.H. McLean, driving north on a night like tonight, the sunset had reddened the tops of the Rockies when a stranger he rode into sight. His suit coat was gray from the dust and the sun, and he looked like a school teacher out on the bum. And that was the evening I met Oscar Nelson, the wobbly who taught me the song. Whoop-a-tie-ya-yo, get along, little doggies. We do the riding and he gets the roses. Whoop-a-tie-ya-yo, in the dust and the rain, while the boss stays at home with the women. Yippee-yi-yay for the union. Woo-hoo! Doggies keep moving. Now, Oscar, I said, you don't look like a cowboy, but you talk like a man who knows J.H. McLean. He says, no, I don't, but boys, I don't need to, 'cause the bosses are all just the same. It's your labor, boys, labor, they're stealing away. Now don't sell your labor for a dollar a day. The boss, when he's old, he's got a ranch and a family. The cowboy, he's got his bedroll and saddle. Hook and tie, yo, get along, little doggies. We do the riding and he gets the roses. Hook and tie, yeah, in the dust and the rain, while the boss stays at home with the women. Yippee-yi-yay for the union. Well, I roped and I wrangled and I rode on a swing, but he's the only bold socialist I ever seen. They're reds and they're wobblies and every damn thing, but I never seen no union cowboy. No, there ain't been a union, and I ain't surprised. And I'll be a cowpuncher till I'm too old to ride. Then I'll work the chuck wagon if the boss keeps me on, but I still sing the doggies' this song. Sing it, boys. Whoop-a-tie-ya-yo, get along, little doggies. We do the riding and he gets the roses. Whoop-a-tie-ya-yo, in the dust and the rain, while the boss stays at home with the women. Yippee-yi-yay for the union. Woo-hoo! Little doggies keep moving.
Bob Boston asked me once if there are any union cowboy songs. I said I hadn't heard of any. So several years after that, he said he had collected one. It was only some years after that he told me he wrote it. Well, but was that consciousness there? Was that conscious union consciousness ever there? Well, it was in 1883, and the cowboys struck. That was called the Tascosa Strike, the Great Tascosa Strike, in the Texas Panhandle. The issue was what was called repleving under the Maverick Law. The range was open then, and so the ranchers started putting their brands on stock run by the small outfits, mainly owned by cowboys who had saved a stake and could start out an operation of their own. The strike was bloody. The strike was broken by the organized power of the big operators. A monograph about the Tascosa strike that should be of interest to you, this is what it says, an excerpt from it. In the present chapter, we desire to show the reader that which the cowboy themselves have made plain to us, that they are distinctly members of the non-possessing yet producing and distributing class, that they are as much at the mercy of the capitalist as the older New England cotton operative, that their supposed freedom is no more of a reality than his. Further evidence will be given that the cowboy as a class are beginning to recognize these facts, are becoming anxious that the general public should know them, and best of all, are desirous, through the medium of either the Knights of Labor or some other working-class organization, to connect themselves with the mass of the laboring class and with the general movement of that class against the tyranny of their employers. The Tascosa strike, those words were written by Anna Marx, Karl Marx's daughter. Let's take a leap forward here. I am going someplace, believe it or not. Take a leap forward here to 1929. Will Rogers heard a young cowboy singing and yodeling in the telegraph office, thought he ought to be making records, and so he made arrangements for him to do that. 1930, a year later, the death of Mother Jones, the great labor organizer. Mother Jones died at the age of 100. She was the miner's friend. President Theodore Roosevelt called her the most dangerous woman in America when she was 83 years old. Passed away in 1930. In 1931, only 2 years after he was discovered by Will Rogers, this young cowboy had his, what would you call, his first hit, because it was recorded on so many different labels. We're going to listen to Gene Autry sing The Death of Mother Jones.
The death of Mother Jones, gloom and sorrow hover around the miner's home. This grand old champion of labor was known in every land. She fought for right and justice. She took an noble stand. O'er the hills and through the valleys, in every mining town, Mother Jones was ready to help them. She never turned them down. On front with the striking miners, she always could be found and received a hearty welcome in every mining town. She was fearless of danger. She hated that which was wrong. She never gave up fighting until her breath was gone. This noble leader of labor has gone to a better land, while the hard-working miners, they miss her guiding hand. May the miners all work together to carry out her plan and bring back better conditions for every laboring man.
Yes, Blind Kenny Hall playing the double mandolin. I forgot the name of that tune. I had intended to write it down. But, boy, if you ever have a chance to get with Kenny and watch him play, the man is absolutely full of joy. He's a jolly, jolly musician. Well, on a sadder note, Buck Ramsey passed away. I only found that out yesterday. A cowboy from down in Amarillo, Texas, whom I knew, a fine singer and a fine cowboy poet. He was a sort of a regular up at the Elko gathering there, the cowboy poetry gathering, and many others. As a young man, he'd been working on a ranch, was thrown by a horse, and was crippled for the rest of his life. He was in a wheelchair all the time. He showed up at Elko one time, and he was going to sing the old songs, and he was going to do the old poems like they always do. But he showed up that year with an epic poem, a cowboy Beowulf, that was maybe an hour or better long. And they weren't prepared to accept it, I don't believe. In fact, I think it doesn't really fit the mold of what we have commonly come to believe as cowboy poetry. But I honor him. He was a fine and remarkable human being. I want you to listen to a little bit of the prologue to the epic poem that Buck Ramsey wrote. It's called As I Rode Out.
And in the morning I was riding out through the breaks of that long plain, and leather creaking in the quieting would sound with trot and trot again. I lived in time with horse hoof falling. I listened well and heard the calling. The earth my mother bade to me, though I would still ride wild and free. And as I flew out on the morning, before the bird, before the dawn, I was the poem, I was the song. My heart would beat the world a warning. Those horsemen now rode all with me, and we were good and we were free. We were not told, but ours a knowing, we were the native strangers there among the things the land was growing. To know this gave us more the care to let the grass keep at its growing and let the streams keep at their flowing. We knew the land would not be ours, that no one has the awful powers to claim the vast and common nesting, to own the life that gave him birth, much less to rape his mother earth and ask her for a mother's blessing, and ever live in peace with her, and dying, come to rest with her. Oh, we would ride, and we would listen, and hear the message on the wind. The grass in morning dew would glisten until the sun would dry and blend the grass to ground and air to skying. We'd know by bird or insect flying, or by their mood or by their song, if time and moon were right or wrong for fitting works and rounds to weather. The critter coats and leaves of trees might flash some signal with a breeze, or wind and sun on flower or feather. We knew our way from dawn to dawn, and far beyond, and far beyond.
Buck Ramsey. Well, so long, Buck. You sure left us a good one. I play a song now by an old friend of mine by the name of Rosalie Sorrells. She collected this song many, many years ago up in Boise, Idaho. It's a cowboy love song, but let me tell you, this one has quite a bit different twist to it.
Now, Juanita, I must leave you. Now's the time to say farewell. They were standing near the ruins while the amber shadows fell. You will miss me, Juanita, but I beg you don't forget. In your eyes the teardrops glisten. Juanita, your eyes are wet. What crying, why my brave Juanita? Do not grieve because I go. I'm good girl. But senor, I love you so. Love me, why of course, Juanita. And I love you, do not grieve. But senor, if you love me, you would never, never leave. I did not think that my flirtation would leave such an impress on your heart. Now I go to wed a maiden of my own country, we must part. I don't be angry, Dulcinea, your cheeks like roses glow. Flash like jewels, the fairest maid of Mexico. One more kiss I'll give you, Dulce. Round her waist his arms entwined, they were standing mid ruins, almost hid by clustering vines, and they have parted now forever. Juanita leaves the place alone. In her eyes no teardrops glisten. From her heart the love is flown. Next morning two vaqueros chains to rest there in the shade. Then at evening's off the shelter. Shelter that the foliage made. Por Dios, cried old vaquero, as he's pulled the vines apart. Here lies an Americano with a dagger in his heart.
Rosalie Sorrell's an old song called Juanita. That's a rare old song. I mentioned Buck Ramsey down in Amarillo. It was he and his friends who took me down to the stockyards because they wanted to show me a statue. It was a very large statue of an enormous black man by the name of Bill Pickett. Bill Pickett, well, at least 50%, in many places, at least 50% of your working cowboys were black cowboys. Jesse Chisholm, the founder, excuse me, of the Chisholm Trail, was a black cowboy. They just don't tell you that in your history books, like so many other things. Bill Pickett invented bull wrestling. It was in a bullfighting rink that he went in with the bull, and he knew that there was a nerve in the bull's lip that if he bit it, the bull would become quite docile, just that he was locked. They were locked in each other's grip for a long, long time. Well, anyway, that's in the song. He passed away at about the age of 73. He's a great black cowboy. Zach Miller, who ran the spread he worked on, wrote the epitaph for him. Mark Ross, my old friend, who's visiting in town here now, went through Amarillo and went to that graveyard and read that epitaph, and then out of that, he made this song, Old Bill Pickett.
Old Bill Pickett's gone away over the Great Divide to the place where all the preachers say both saint and sinner abide. If the check is brand like I think the will, it's running hoss they'll give to Bill and some good wild steers till he gets his fill and a great big crowd to watch him ride. Old Bill Pickett's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Bill Pickett was a mighty black man and he rode for the 101. Way down yonder on the Cherokee lands, around when the West was won. Well, he'd jump a steer from a running hoss and he'd throw him down with a mighty toss. And he worked for many, but he had no boss. He was the last of the great cow hands. Old Bill Pickett's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song.
It was way down south in Mexico. He took a great big dare to try and hold a fighting bull to see how he would fare. Well, he grabbed old Toro by the horns. He grabbed the bull's nose in his jaws. The crowd never seen such a thing before. For an hour and a half they cheered. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. With the great Will Rogers and Wild Tom Mix, he rode for the rodeo. For all the paid the 50 cents, he gave a great big show. For all the paid to come and see Bill wrestle steers with his teeth. Now we've never seen such a mighty feat, cause he left us long ago. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. It was way down on the Miller Ranch in the year of 32. Bill Pickett roped a sorrel stud to see what he could do. That sorrel stomped and jumped and bucked and tromped Bill's body in the dust. At 73, Bill was out of luck. Took 11 days to die. There's nothing they could do. Well, old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. So they laid him down in a 6x3 beneath the land he knew, and left across for the world to see. Said of his kind we've seen few. That night for Bill they drank some wine, and old Zach Miller he wrote these lines and left them there for me to find. Put to music and sing to you. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song.
Well, old Bill Pickett's a long time gone. My friend Mark Ross, he sure knows how to pen a good song. We are, once again, this is being recorded broadcast in February. Once again, we are hovering upon the edge of war. And that, of course, disturbed me very, very deeply. Where does that fit into a program about cowboy music? Well, I've carried a tape recorder around with me a good bit. Sometimes I know how to use it, sometimes I don't. It's got to be pretty primitive, which means it doesn't record awfully well. I was in a parking lot down in Kerrville, Texas, 1992. It was a very large, rangy fellow by the name of Wolf. We were standing in the rain, and I was holding that little recorder with a built-in microphone up to him, and he was singing a song that's about that. And I don't know where this song comes from. He didn't know where the song came from, but... And I tell you, this is in the rain in a parking lot with a bad recorder, but you want you to listen to this song. It's called The First Time He Ever Rode His Pony.
Oh, the first time he'd ever rode his pony. It was all along the Rio Hondo Wall. He was just a lad. Besides, Rio Hondo are a jungle. You may lose yourself in just one careless glance. Oh, but Mom and Dad were so proud of him when the horse and rider both came smiling back. By the time this noble cowboy reached 11, wrapped in paper all the way from Mexico, came a birthday present that didn't cost much, you know.
But to him, his first guitar is solid gold. Caution. Yesterday he'd reached his manhood, and his sweet 16 true love don't sink and swim. For he loved her more than he could ever tell her, but she knew his old guitar was his best friend. So strange and cold on Monday, as he handed us a package through the door, and we saw the shattered wood of an old guitar. On one piece was carved the words, "Make love, not war." Oh, the first time he'd ever rode his pony.
Sometimes those moments happen, and you've got to be there so they don't pass you by. And either you've got a real good memory and are a fast study, you've got that little machine in your hand like Studs Terkel, and you capture that moment. And I'm sure glad that I caught that one, especially in the troubled times that we're in right now. Over 50 years ago, there were a bunch of cowboys that went to work at Grand Canyon National Park, and they became muleteers. They were the ones who took people down the Bright Angel Trail and others to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. At night, those cowboys got together, and they sang, and they played for square dances. Well, years of work, they finally dispersed, went back and had three separate lives in three different places. Finally, after not seeing each other for 50 years, they came together for a reunion in Prescott, Arizona, down at a cowboy poetry gathering. And they talked, and they jawboned together, and they played, even though they hadn't played together for so many years. I just want to give you a hint of what happened on that stage. A fiddler from Chino Valley, Arizona, one of the Grand Canyon band by the name of Slim, only he's telling a story.
One time there was a cowpuncher got in town. He got a little too much to drink one Saturday night, and the next morning he was wandering around and trying to find a place he could get to cure that headache. And he seen a bunch of people going in a place, and he thought, boy, the bar's open, I'll just go in there. So he went in, and he got in. It was a church, and there's only one seat left, and it's right up in the amen corner. And the preacher said, come on up, brother, and sit down right here. Here's a seat. So he sat down, and the preacher started in. He's kind of a long-winded preacher. And he went to sleep, the old boy did. And pretty soon the preacher said, anybody that wants to go down there, stand up. So he stood up. He heard that part. And he looked around and he said, well, preacher. I don't know what we're voting for, but look like me and you're the only one that's going.
Well, that was Slim from the Grand Canyon Band. Oh, those guys, they were the real article, and they were humble, and they were hard-working people all of their life. I guess that there's no love lost between me and that cowboy image that gets foisted off on us as the image of the true American and of the true Westerner, as I said, the strong male image who will act alone and act violently if provoked. But when you scrape away all of that image, you find hard-working folks working at real low wages under awful conditions. And also you find people whose trade is vanishing. It's really hard when your trade runs out on you. What do? I know exactly how that feels. The first cowboy music I heard when I moved to Salt Lake in 1947 with my folks was over radio station KDYL. And the fellow was singing was a cowboy by the name of Slim Critchlow. Now, this song he's going to sing you to wind this up was recorded in a kitchen, his kitchen. You can hear people dropping things in the background and washing dishes. It's another one of those, here's the moment, don't let it go by. But I think this sums up pretty well how a lot of people who did that work feel. Slim Critchlow, and he's singing The Last Wagon.
Someday when the barbed wire flings his band like a fisherman's net round the last rangeland, the last rendezvous wagon will roll its way to the last bed ground at the end of the day. Lord, don't let me live to see the last remuda will jingle into the last corral while the night birds sing. The last cooking fires will flicker bright by the dwarf mesquite on that round of night. Lord, where will that bed ground be? And then in the morning from tarp and tent, the round of crew on their work intent will answer the call of the wagon boss. On the dew wet range their circles cross. Lord, where will those circles end? The drives will come from flat and hill, and the cattle bawl while the irons grow chill, and silent men watch their last herd go, while notched in the hill the sun sinks low. Lord, how will you make amend? Last around the crew, last wagon boss, how can you measure the thing that is lost? What will live on the grass-grown range? All will be lost, and what will be gained? Lord, how will you comfort me?
I've certainly enjoyed spending this time with you and going over some thoughts and ideas and some unknown music. This is Utah Phillips, and you've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Now here's a recipe, time tried and true, for Chuck Wagon Coffee, the Buckaroo's Brew. Use water and coffee in equalized parts, then set it on the fire. That's how the deal starts. Boil hard for 2 hours, and into it toss the well-rusted shoe of a club-footed hoss. Gaze into the pot for a few minutes steady. If the hoss shoe ain't floating, your coffee ain't ready.